All right.
Today is the 11th of May. I'm Carrie Klein, here with my partner and husband, Michael Klein, in the trustees' room of the Concord Free Public Library, here to talk about the history of Anderson Photograph. And let's have everybody introduce yourselves. Would you start?
Yes. Fine. I'm Mary Anderson. My husband was William Anderson, and he was the one who started Anderson's Photography. I guess that would be the proper way of putting it to start with, anyway.
Okay. And are you comfortable giving a date of birth to put this in some perspective?
Yes, I'm very comfortable. I was born on the 18th of August in 1925. You won't.
Boy, are you beautiful.
Thank you. Would you like me to give you Bill's birthday?
Yes, I would.
Bill was born in 1924 on March 13th, and we met in high school. Or I spotted him, and and that was sort of it.
Oh. Well, let's have everyone else introduce, and then we'll come back to you, and we can jump around some.
Hi, I'm Libby Anderson Monahan. I am the youngest of Mary's children. And I live here in Concord.
And your date of birth?
July 3rd, 1954.
Okay. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm Kristen Emerson, third child, first daughter, and I was born on August 20th, 1950.
Okay. All right, Mary. Well, for a little perspective, maybe tell us about your people and where you were raised. Get us into the story.
Well, I bumped around for the first maybe 10 years of my life. I started out in Ottawa, Ontario, and this was right after the First World War. And my father, who had gotten his degree at Edinburgh at the a gift from the King of England after his fighting with the Canadian Expeditionary Force. And, at that time, at the time I was born, he was working as a newspaper man. And my mother, who was really the powerhouse in our family for many years, decided that this was not for him. And so she announced to him one day that we were moving to New York. She said, I'm going to go first, I'll get a job, and I'll get you a job, and then you and the children can come down. And that's how we landed in New York. She got herself a job on Broadway. Wall Street. She got herself a job on Wall Street. She did, in fact, get a job from my father. And we ended up living in Flushing, Long Island, which my mother never referred to as Flushing. She called it Broadway, which happened to be the railroad stop. I never asked her why, but I think I can figure it out. And so we lived there until I was 10 years old, at which time my father had offers from several brokerage firms. He'd gotten into brokerage. And he accepted the job in Boston. So that's how we got up to this area. And several of the men who worked in the firm in Boston lived in either Lincoln or Concord and suggested that we come to that area to live. So we did. We settled in Lincoln, which is a very small town. I think there were no more than 2,000 people in Lincoln at the time. And so that when the time came for me to go to high school, Lincoln children were sent to mostly Concord High School. And that's where, on the first day of classes, I spotted my future husband. He walked into the classroom that I was in. And that's how we met. And we married We married shortly after we graduated from high school because of the war. He had had a year of college, and we had decided that if he was going to Asia, which it looked like he was going, this was 1945, the war in Europe was over, that maybe we better get married. And then, of course, the war in Asia almost immediately, because of the atom bomb, stopped. And so then we went up to what was then Massachusetts State College. It's now the University of Massachusetts. And that's where Anderson Photos started. And really and honestly, prior to that, I don't remember Bill as being a camera buff. I mean, occasionally cameras would record moments in our life, but I don't have a lot of that, so I know he wasn't taking a lot of pictures, at least at that time. Anyway, and the kids will probably correct the situation there. So we went to University of Massachusetts. He started out where he had left off. He'd been there for a year before the war started, and we had a little apartment, and we had one child, and we're expecting another, and he was adding to the $90 a month that the government gave us. Can you imagine back then? by taking photographs at campus events.
The government, this was from having been a veteran?
Yes, yes.
So he was taking photos on the side for extra money.
Well, he was taking photos at all the places he figured that people would like to have their photos taken, like at proms and different kinds of events like that. And he was extraordinarily successful. I mean, we had the smallest little place to live in, because there were three of us there. So one room was a single bed and a crib. And I have a wonderful story, which I guess I better not tell, right, about the doctor?
I don't know. I don't remember that story.
She does.
It's up to you, Mom. Everyone's going to hear it, so it's...
Well, anyway, because we were a small family, we connected with the doctor, and one time I went over to see him, and I said, I think I'm pregnant, and I don't want to be. And he said, well, if you're pregnant, you're pregnant, and you better get used to it. So at some point in this time, I was quite sick, and so Bill called the doctor and asked the doctor to come over and see me. So he came into our little bedroom, and he was sitting on the side of the bed, and he checked me over and decided I had flu or something. And he said, you sleep here, he said, of the single bed. And I said, yes. And he said, and the baby sleeps there. And I said, yes. And I said, and where does your husband sleep? And I said, he sleeps here. He says, he sleeps here? And I said, yes. He said, well, no wonder you're pregnant.
So, pause. That's it.
That story. I'm assuming you liked the outcome of the pregnancy.
That would be Billy.
So, but in any case, he was taking pictures all over the campus to complement what we were getting from the government. And he finally said after that term at college, I think it was his sophomore year, he said, you know something, he said, this is what I want to do. This is really what I want to do. So we went back to Concord, and he talked to his mother about wanting to start a photography business, and she understood. And so we were living with her, and she gave him a big old closet for a dark room. And that's basically where Anderson's Photos started. It started in a big closet in a huge farmhouse on 9 Acre Corner in Concord. And from there, it grew into, finally, the store, which...
No, the store's closed, but it then went to over Anderson's Market.
This is Libby.
Yes. Hi.
Yes, that's true.
Anderson's Market, which was owned by Lars Anderson, which was our great-grandfather.
Yes.
And then my grandfather, Leslie, owned it. And upstairs over it was some little apartments or rooms. And Dad had a studio and a dark room there. So that's what. Do you know what year that was?
Late '40s, probably. Yeah.
I'm going to say around 47.
Right.
Yeah. Around 1947.
Is when he moved out of, I'm assuming it was a walk-in closet at Nine Acre Farm?
Yes, from the walk-in closet on the farm in Nine Acre Corner to an upstairs space over his father's and grandfather's store, Anderson's Market. And there was enough room for him to have a studio and a dark room up there. And so that's where it officially began as a business. He was in his element. He loved it.
Yeah, talk more about that moment when he said, "This is what I want to do," and he was in his element taking pictures, you're saying?
He had a studio because there was enough room up there for him to have a studio and also a dark room, so he didn't have to have a dark room at home. He could do all the work was stayed right there in this one space.
And actually, something that you can talk about.
Here's Kristen.
At that launching of this, he had been trained as a pilot during the war. And when he came back, he combined the skill of flying with taking photographs.
Oh, so that's right. So that's right. He started out. I had forgotten that he started out taking aerial photographs, which was an absolute novelty at that time, an absolute novelty. And I was out on the street, knocking on doors and showing people their house from the sky, and it was a great sale. Everybody just look at that kind of thing, so we didn't have any trouble selling those photographs.
You'd walk around and offer people a picture of their house from above.
Yes,
try to sell.
Yes, I'd just knock on the door, and. And it didn't, you know, people are always resistant to salespeople at the door, but if the minute I flashed the photograph at them, they would soften right down. They wanted to find out how they could get a hold of this picture. Because it was unique. It was unique. I suppose there were aerial pictures before that. I'm sure there were. But nobody had, in our area, nobody had done anything about it. So it was... I had forgotten that. Thank you.
Would that have been the early 50s?
No, right after the war.
Right after the war. How did you feel about door knocking?
It didn't bother me at all. It really didn't.
You've got the smile for the
door. Well, I don't know. I made one of the best friends I ever had in my life by knocking on their door.
Who was that?
Bruce King.
Can you reconstruct that experience?
Well, I was I was in West Concord at that time, and that's the western branch of Concord, and then he had taken some pictures in that area, and we'd go along the street and locate, and he would make prints of the ones that were really good, so I would walk up to the house, and all I had to do was flash the picture. And I walked up their driveway because there was a baby carriage in the driveway, and there was obviously a baby asleep in it. And she came, oh, I know, and a friend of mine had told me to try them anyway. She was quite fascinated with the picture, and she bought it. And her husband was fascinated.
Who was that?
Stafford, they were Stafford and Ruth King. What was his business? Oh, I know, his father's business was electric meters. that everybody had on a house.
He was a pilot as well, so he probably
also,
really...
He also was a pilot, so he was... The whole thing was very fascinating. We became fast friends.
And still are.
And
well,
still...
Well, they've deceased, but the kids and us
yes,
are all still
yeah.
good friends.
They're next to family kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh.
And so that started out well, and then I don't... Somewhere in there, Bill's father, Leslie... made the space up over the store at Bill's, gave it to Bill to use as he wanted, and he did put a, he and at that time he had a close friend who was his partner, John Wood. So it was Anderson and Wood, right? And they were in the space up over Anderson's Market, which is now Anderson's... Main Street Cafe. In the downtown Concord.
Still owned by an Anderson.
Yes. It's still owned by my husband's nephew.
David.
So when there was the previous market, then people would walk upstairs to Anderson?
Then that was where, yes, eventually it became known that he was there, and he started people started to come in off the street to see him. I don't think he ever did any advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to maybe give you a break for a sec. There's a fabulous photograph that my father took from that studio up over what we all knew as Anderson Market. And it was taken probably around 47. And you see down the alley to the absolute center intersection of town, and you see a 1940 style car, a policeman directing traffic, and it just gives you a beautiful clip of life in the center at that time. And I think that one of the fabulous things about my father's business over the years, he was always right in the center, and he was not an outgoing man. He was very reserved, but through his eye, he captured things. So from there up on that second floor to the center, and then ultimately he moved down to a storefront, which you can see in that picture, but it's on Walden Street. So over the course of decades of his career, he was able to capture. He really chronicled a particular place at a particular time over a couple of decades. So anyway, I just wanted to say that the aerial business launched this, and then it went on into some other directions, but the common denominator was being right in Concord Center.
And that was Kristen. Here's Libby.
But at that time, didn't he start taking portraits? Children and family?
Yeah, but somewhere along the way, he and John went out to the West Coast and took lessons from that very famous photographer on the West Coast. Do you remember?
The last name was Mortensen.
Yes,
Mortensen. And it was a very particular style that's quite captivating.
This is Kristen.
And so I actually hadn't known they had gone to California to study that, but they did, and then they came back and photographed many, many, many people in Concord, so that a lot of the dining rooms across town had Anderson Wood portraits or William Anderson portraits of their children. They were extremely recognizable by this soft portrait. By soft, I mean... wasn't hard smiles on everybody's, but a real soulful, is that the right word? A gentle portrait that really showed who the person was.
And it almost was an art because he used, the technique was with pencils. So isn't that correct? He went in.
It looked like pencils. It was a screen.
Screens. Yeah. But it was, so the photographs were just amazing. And I still have friends who still have their photographs when they were children, and that's quite a few years ago. So
you should have brought one in. So what were you saying about screens?
Well, when he went to California to take lessons from, you remember the?
Mortensen.
Mr. Mortensen had developed a wonderful way of portraiture with backgrounds that had just very soft, shaded in, just suggestive kind of geometrical,
etching.
And it was done with just a clear plastic screen. With the lines in there very gently that you would place over the...
You're making the print in the darkroom, the darkroom enlarger goes through the screen, so there's just a suggestion of an etching. It's very subtle.
Of a particular scene, then, a little landscape?
No, just...
Portraiture.
Yeah. Let me see if I can make this... audibly understandable. If there was a portrait of me, in the background you could see the backdrop that's just plain. But if you look very closely, you see there's a gentle texture to it, just a little dashes. So it's nothing you see. You might not ever even acknowledge it, but it gave it a textural quality. Very subtle textural quality.
Unique.
Yeah, very unique.
And what's the art of having someone look so relaxed instead of that hard smile? I mean,
I think his personality had a lot to do with that. He had an extraordinarily gentle personality, and children would eventually just... Don't you think that was part of it?
Children and dogs.
Yeah, he was not a challenging personality at all. He was a very comfortable, wonderful, very shy personality, if anything. So
I think he put people at ease. And I mentioned the dogs because I don't know that he was a dog person at all, but he made a number of dog portraits that are wonderful to look at. And he was like a dog whisperer when it came to time in the studio.
Solo dog.
Yes.
Jumping around a little bit, about 10 years ago, Kristen set up an exhibit up in my father's old studio over Anderson's photo. Over Anderson's Market, excuse me, of Dad's aerials and dog photographs and people, farmers and so forth. And there was a sort of a rekindling of interest in his work. And the dogs were a big seller, and as were the aerials. The aerials, everyone all of a sudden wanted an old aerial of their property. And so there's still a demand for them.
Why do you think?
He was unique. You see a lot of photography now, and it's all digital, and everyone can pretty much take a photograph. Dad would take a photo and turn it into a piece of art, and it just, I guess... there's something gentle and soft and interesting about his work. It wasn't in-your-face type of art, if that makes sense.
Sense. Yeah, I think so. He saw things that the rest of us couldn't see, and he knew how to, somehow or other, he knew how to get them presented in a camera. Not something I ever could do.
He saw things that you hadn't seen before?
Well, he just had an artist's eye. I think that's the best thing to say. He just knew how to take a picture of something. I can't describe it. These two can, because both of them are artists, but I'm just a housewife.
No, that's not true.
No, but one way of...
Uh, looking at the lineage on this, his mother, whom we've talked about before, Esther Anderson, ran the farm, but she was also very interested in nature and thorough, and I've talked about how she went through the backwoods of Concord and photographed things that had been noted by Thoreau in his journal. So she documented nature, and they were great pictures, but it was more of a document, really. And so my father, her son, had a great appreciation for nature. He was totally at one with nature as a boy out there in the farm. And when photography surfaced as a means of expression for him, I think he took his mother's interest and then took it a little bit farther. And as my sister Libby said, the photograph became art. And so it went beyond document to statement and feeling. And
what camera, sort of camera, did she use, Mary?
Esther, you mean? My
Esther.
Oh.
It would be Bill's mother, Esther.
Mother Esther.
Is that what you mean?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I'm not great on the technical stuff, but I think it was one of the Kodak's early good cameras. Not a Brownie, but
yeah, because it was Kodachrome, wasn't it? Her slides.
Well, Kodachrome made a big difference in her life when it came. And that was in the mid-30s, wasn't it? That Kodak came in.
Right. She
Kodachrome. I don't even exactly know what that is.
Well, who is it?
There's a
Simon.
Song.
Yeah,
it's a song.
What is it?
There's a song. Is it
Libby?
Something about Kodachrome. And I'm not going to sing it because I can't.
Oh, come
but,
now.
No. But it's a kind of a film that the colors are just incredibly vibrant.
Yes, the colors are vibrant and they are permanent, as opposed to some of the films that were developed later, like Ektachrome.
I think the most important thing about Kodachrome is that it was slide.
Yes.
It was a slide, and you could put it into a slide projector. Yeah. You could put it into a slide projector, and it would project onto a screen perfectly. And as a matter of fact, she created a series of slides, all with taken. Excuse me.
Have a drink.
She would find something in her readings of Thoreau. She would go to that spot. She would find the plant. She would take a picture of it. And then she would append to that picture. There would be a quotation from Thoreau that related to that picture. And starting during or even before the war, she had a lecture that she gave where she showed the pictures and she read the appropriate the appropriate piece from Thoreau. And it was fascinating. I mean, it's very popular throughout all the garden clubs and so forth in the area. I went with her once, by the way, when she gave it over at the military installation in Bedford. It wasn't quite that. It wasn't appreciated as much by the boys as these garden clubs appreciated it. But she was wonderful.
Your mother-in-law.
The bottle makes noise on the microphone.
You can keep it. Just stop popping. Don't scrunch it.
Don't pop the bottle.
I'm not sure, but I believe that there's a photograph of Esther's upstairs in the exhibit, the Wyatt exhibit.
Your grandmother.
Grandmother. Yeah, I think that there's a photograph upstairs, but not sure. I haven't been up to look, but.
Do you remember her?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What are some of your memories of her?
I remember going out and staying for the weekend. Mom would drive me up across town, drop me off, and I'd be there with my cousin Maureen Wilson. And it was just wonderful. We would kind of camp in and then get up in the morning, and we always went for a walk, whether it was down to Fairhaven Bay or through the different woods. Second Division at that time wasn't developed. And we always had a bag with a snack and something, and she'd be identifying plants and so forth. And it was stepping back in time when you went out to visit her, because she believed in reading and being outdoors and the good things in life. So, but I remember her quite well. She died in 1985. So, and I must have been in my late 20s, 30s. So, yeah.
Maureen is E-E-N or I-N-E?
I-N-E. She was named after the Maureens. Maureens. Did I say that right? M-A-U-R-I-N-E. Mm-hmm. Her father was in the Marines.
Oh.
So it's different spelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm not 100% sure about that.
We'll research it.
But we'll research it.
So I wonder when Bill did first have access to a camera.
Well, it's interesting. That's a very interesting question, because the only time that the earliest time I remember being anywhere with him was the day we went hiking up Penobscot. Is it or
Punkatasset? No, in Framingham.
A small mountain in Framingham. I think the Boy Scouts own it. I'm not sure about that.
I think it's Knob Hill.
But we that was the only excursion during our childhood connection of in high school, excuse me, I shouldn't get it back too far, where I remember him having a camera in hand. That was the only time I remember.
And what do you remember about that?
What do I remember about it?
Yeah.
Well, I can remember climbing the hill, and I can remember climbing the tower, and I can remember that he was there, and there was one other couple. I think it was Jimmy Beardsley, but I'm not sure. I have lots of memories of our childhood, of our relationships through high school, but I don't think that they're relevant to this. I don't think they're relevant.
Well, there are a zillion snapshots from that era that either he took or his mother. So fabulous photos of all of you having a great time and around the farmhouse. So. The multitude of photographs from both sides of the family is overwhelming, and when you give yourself to them, there's a full picture of life on the farm, in the case of the Anderson photos, and in the case of my mother's family, her mother grew up in Japan. They too took an enormous number of photographs, and it really presents a full picture of the life that they led, which by comparison to life in Concord was quite exotic. So that's just a history of photography coming from both angles.
We were talking about Dad and being up on top of Anderson's Market. And as Pookie said, he did move down to Walden Street, where he opened Anderson Photo, a store. The other one wasn't really a store, though, was it? It was more of a studio. And
as in
It was a studio, and that was there was a major difference. You're right.
Well, there was a studio in the store.
Yes, he had the back part of the store was his studio, and the front was a store.
This was
a museum. I sold cameras and film, and did and sent things that sent people's rolls of film out to be processed
in the new location.
Yes, it was a complete photography store.
And the wonderful thing for my father was that Dad and Mom and the family lived around the corner on Hubbard Street, so Dad could walk to work and then walk home, have lunch, take a nap in the backyard, and then come back and work. So he didn't need to drive to work. It was the perfect location. And but the store was consuming. Dad worked 6 days a week, and come holiday time,
it was Christmas was cruel. It was cruel. He was struggling right up until the time we had Christmas dinner on. He was struggling.
Working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Partly because everything he did was done by hand. He was a very specific kind of craftsperson. He wanted things his way, and he did not send things out to be done.
Yeah. Or have help either in the developing?
No, he did the darkroom work himself, and that was consuming, and he was a, as she said, a perfectionist, a craftsman. So, but there was a retail division, which is quite demanding in and of itself, and then full service, anything photo related, and he never knew how to say no. So if you asked, if somebody would come in and ask him to do something, he'd say yes, and then figure it out.
So he was also in the front retail part as well as the studio any help?
Well, he ultimately got wonderful help up front, and that began to take more and more care of itself so that he could take photographs and do the printing. So, and at some point, he probably would have a staff of about 3 or 4 extra people when it got rolling.
But not to make the pictures.
No, later when I took over the business, or I came to help him run the business, I did hire people to work in the darkroom. And that was probably hard for him, but on the other hand, it was probably a great relief. Then he didn't have to be tied to the store.
He was sick. Dad had cancer, so he really was relying on Kristen. But also, we sort of forgot Billy, our brother, our second brother. Billy worked for quite a while with Dad through the years.
Yes.
Right?
Making pictures, snapping.
Everything.
He really popularized. He really opened up Anderson Photo conceptually and made it a really popular place to go, and Billy himself, or Billy, was an artist / photographer, so he was out photographing all sorts of things. So he was continues to be, but as a motivator for the store, he was very energetic, electric, and charismatic. So I think he really brought it to a new level.
What do you think?
What do I think? I think that she's been very, very kind to her brother. Her brother is really, when it comes to being an artist is almost
over. Oh, simply.
So just in thinking about Anderson Photo, the shop in the center of town, and having what my father had done as a personality, and then having that even amplified more with my brother in a very different era, because at that time, now we're in the 70s, it became, the shop became really a center. People came to the shop with the great moments of life, births, graduations, birthday parties, weddings, and so forth.
And that was Kristen. Here's Libby.
Also, talking about that, Dad not only took photographs of children and dogs and landscape, he did weddings. He was a wedding photographer also. So he knew a lot of people in Concord, and those people would come into the store, and there'd be other people out front, but they'd want Bill to come. They'd go, I want to see Bill Anderson, please. I really want to see Bill Anderson, no one else. You know, so he had a following, right?
Yes. He had a following.
He
was wonderful at weddings, I was told once by somebody who had had him at their wedding. Because Bill was absolutely very, very quiet in many, many different ways. And he knew how to move around a room without creating any kind of a fuss. So people would get their pictures taken without being aware of the fact that they were being photographed. And so that always his wedding pictures were much. And he spent time at every wedding singling out the people who were important to the family. He had an instinct about who mattered and who didn't matter so much. So that the pictures he took at weddings were full of meaning to the family. It was just out of his instinct, would you say? Yes.
So people weren't aware that they were being photographed?
No, a lot of the times they had no idea. He would get people talking to one another or else looking at something that was going on. I mean, nobody was posed in his pictures in a sense, or very few people were posed.
It sounds like he really captured
people. Yes, he had an instinct about how to take pictures.
Another fun part of his career was taking photographs of the boys at Fenn School. And there was the annual picture day, and they would line up probably 200 kids and right in the front of the school, row upon row, and right in the middle would be the founder of the school, Roger Fenn. So all of those were in his store of negatives, but the fun thing is that he himself, my father, went to Fenn, and there's a great picture of him as a 8-year-old with a grumpy face sitting right next to a young Roger Fenn. So there's wonderful history in those.
Yeah.
And let's see. He did lots of ribbon cutting throughout the town, new buildings that opened up. And so, as I said, his work became a chronicle, a document of this town. And the pictures that were very current when he took them, you look at them now, and it is a 1960s diorama. And
explain that.
Well, I was just going to say, he also was hired by the police department to photograph car accidents. So you have, what Dad's archives have, a photograph of a street sweeper and a Volkswagen in an accident. I mean, no one was hurt, but it's just this wonderful photograph. You look at it and you just think, trying to imagine how it happened, sort of.
But right, the street. Well, what's the municipal truck with? I don't know. Oh, okay. Is it a cleaner? Okay, yeah, I thought it was a flattener.
Anyway. Yeah.
But yes, yeah, so there's all sorts of things on that line, and he had a wonderful cadence to his walk, and as Libby said, in the morning he walked down and took a left onto Walden Street and went to work, and at the end of the day he walked down Walden Street and took a right down Hubbard to home, and that march he made pretty much right up until his last few days. And it was very tough because he was very sick and he fought cancer for almost a decade, but he
wanted to stay at the store.
Yeah.
He didn't want to give up going to work even though he was so sick. And that was his life, you know, the family in the store and taking pictures and people. And Concord was his home. You know, he loved it. He loved being downtown and seeing people and being part of it. And I think that they all loved him. So, what do you think?
Well,
I keep asking
what's
you
not
that.
What's not to love?
Yeah. The question is, how was it to love someone who was so busy being loved by everyone?
No. I was a very fortunate woman. He was wonderful. He really was.
And we miss him.
Yes.
Sounds like he was gone so much having to work.
Well, that's the truth of the matter. I mean, Christmas was an ordeal for him, an absolute ordeal, because people would come in and to have their children picture taken with the idea that Grammy and Grandpa would love to have pictures of the children for Christmas. And he used to work till midnight the week or so before Christmas,
yeah,
and even on Christmas Eve.
He'd come home for dinner and then go back. But even though he worked a lot, he was just around the corner. And growing up, I could walk down to Dad's store and never have to cross the street and pop in, and he'd always have time to say hello and pay attention. And so he was there. It just, he was working. But different than him driving into Boston or somewhere far away. He was just around the corner. Yeah.
You know, as you all wax on, I can picture a large photography book of Concord based on these photographs. I can see it as clearly in my mind as if it was on this table. And I'm wondering, is the family taking any steps in that direction?
Well, Kristen. Yes, always steps in that direction. Since I have the bulk of his work and always with the hope of making a production, as you mentioned, and I just seem to constantly get sidetracked by my own work, but there is never, ever a time that I go into his work that I am not thrilled. It just goes right to the heart, both because of the emotional connection to him and to the town, but because photographically, aesthetically, they're so interesting. So just as it has for the past few decades, it's coming.
If I may, I could picture a book with this interview as the commentary, with pictures arranged all through. So you have text and pictures, but this is such a beautiful description of an artist and his work.
No shortage of ideas and no shortage of images and no shortage of sentiment.
You talked about Christmas as a time when he was busy, and you talked about yourself as a housewife, and I think of that as a busy time for a housewife.
Well, for the last, 15 or 20 years of our marriage, I was working full-time. Only because that was the only way we could keep going. I had, am I saying this right?
Yes, he was sick and...
So I was very fortunate because I managed to get a pretty good job.
Where? Where was your job?
At Brandeis University.
So you got a good job at Brandeis.
I had been working part-time and going to Brandeis part-time. And finally, somebody told me that there was a pretty good job coming up, and why didn't I interview for it? And there was a new executive vice president coming, so I interviewed for that job, thinking this is just an interview. And I got the job, which was absolutely amazing. I mean, it was just an amazing job. He had come into the university at a time when it needed to be stirred up a little bit. It had gotten into the usual kind of euphoria, just sort of day-to-day goings on, and he stoked up the fires. He was a fascinating man.
Name.
And Arthur Gillis.
And then you had the...
And your job then?
He gave me... I was his executive secretary, so there was nothing that went on in the university that didn't crisscross my desk. It was all of a sudden, wow.
But you also,
maybe,
in this full-time job, taking classes, and Dad encouraged Mom to keep going while he was sick, and... So I think it was a year after Dad died, you graduated.
I graduated. I had started out taking part-time courses at Brandeis because we were married so young that we were almost married. I was almost married right out of high school. So I really never got...
But tell her, what did you graduate? Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember. I graduated as a senior.
No. That was good. That wasn't quite what I meant, Mom.
You still have the upper hand, don't you, Mary?
You were class marshal.
She was class marshal.
I was a class marshal, but in, I...
And magnum?
Magna cum laude.
While your husband was sick... While you were executive secretary to the vice president of Brandeis, while you were a quote-unquote housewife running a home, commuting.
Yes. Oh, I had a leg up on everybody else. None of those kids know what they've been given by college. It really is interesting because I think it's a gift. I suppose all of my children appreciated the fact that they went to college. To be perfectly honest, one time I got into an argument with my oldest child and his best friend. And
when you were, well, they were in high school?
They were just in high school, but they had been in a class called critical thinking. Is that what it was? So they got me cornered one day on some issue. I have no idea what it was. They made me so mad. I stood them up against the wall, and I said, one of these days, after you guys are educated, I'm going back to college. And I said, and then let's have this discussion.
And have you?
I think that all of us have forgotten what the issue was.
Wow.
Anyway, it's been fun.
we should do a full interview, at least one with you about you. I mean,
about me? I don't see why that's necessary.
Well, that just says a lot about you right there. Yeah. But winding up with Anderson Photography and with Bill and what he chronicled, how has Concord changed since the first imagery that he documented?
Well, Concord's much, much, much bigger than it. I mean, I remember Concord when I was in high school. We would sometimes skin out at lunch and come downtown and get an ice cream cone. And there may be four or five cars parked, what is it called?
Diagonal.
Not diagonal, before.
Parallel
parking.
No.
Perpendicular.
Perpendicular, this way. What's that?
Just out?
No, parallel parking.
Oh, okay.
There'd just be a few cars downtown, and we'd come down and get a ice cream cone at Richardson's because there was a cute guy working there and helping me.
But never mind.
It was Kristen, I think.
I have to say I absolutely loved the experience of high school. I absolutely loved it. It was just wonderful. Field hockey. The only thing I didn't like was the fact that there wasn't any girls' baseball. That really upset me. They played tennis. She plays tennis. You do too, don't you? No. She plays golf.
But it was fun for you. That was your tennis. Introduction to Concord, was coming to Concord for high school.
And yes, it was. It seemed wonderful.
Can you say that again?
Well, you had asked, how did she feel Concord had changed? And her first introduction was in high school, and I think...
1940.
Right.
1940.
I mean, just the numbers itself necessitate, or what's the word? Change will happen just because of the numbers. And I'm sure it's a wonderful community now, and there are pockets of sub-communities, but I just think, in general, the whole culture was just folksier, quieter, calmer.
Folksier, Kristen?
Well, just that when you're not rushing around, you have a chance to just be folks.
Oh, let me tell you something. One of the first things that I saw when I used to come down to coming downtown was this old car that was just barely a car. It was just a few pieces of black steel put together with a little hood and a person sitting there with one little stick. How old would you?
Who was it?
It was Bill's Aunt Mary.
Oh.
And she lived at the Colonial Inn, which at that time was called God's Waiting Room. Because there were no old folks home, so when it was time to retire out of mainstream living, you went to the Colonial Inn, at least you did if you had enough money, I guess. Anyway, his Aunt Mary, who was a notorious spinster, or not a notorious spinster, a spinster of renown or something in the town,
okay,
had the car that drove this way.
With the gears down at her waist, is that what you're describing?
Yeah, like a Model T or something.
And that was Mary Anderson?
Wheeler.
Mary Wheeler.
Mary Wheeler.
Okay. Mary Wheeler, which was his mother's family. And the Wheelers had been here. I think there was a Wheeler in the first group of men, which was about 13 or 14, who came.
We're the 13th generation.
Oh.
This is Libby. We're the 13th generation of the Wheelers. In Concord.
It's deep.
Yeah, a lot of roots. Oh. So, but you're right, interviewing my mother alone, the stories that she has of Concord.
No, I don't tell those stories.
And we won't be filtering her.
Yeah. But, I mean...
No, it's a great town. I can't tell you how fortunate I felt to have been able to bring my children up in Concord. It's a unique, wonderful experience. Just for every different kind of reason, besides being just a beautiful town.
Can you talk more about the changes over the decades as you began to raise a family? What things began to...
Well, I'm pretty much a realist about the change. I mean, I'm sorry to see things become more and more cityfied, if that's the right word to use. But when I moved to Lincoln, when my family moved to Lincoln, there were only 1,500 people there at the time, and I had something like 19 students in my classroom. It was like going to a private school. And I had come from a 49-student classroom at PS 32 in Flushing, New York. It was just like somebody walked into a room and turned on a light. It was just marvelous. That was just euphoric for me. And then some of the things that I could do well when I was young came out. First of all, I could sing. So Miss King, who was the mathematics teacher, comic opera or
operetta,
like Pinafore and things of that sort. So I always got a singing role, and then she also, although my father used to make me shut up every Sunday afternoon so he could listen to the Philharmonic on the radio, Miss King used to take a bunch of us into Pops during the pop season in the late spring. She took us all every Friday afternoon into Pops, which was wonderful. I mean, it was just wonderful. This business of seeing an orchestra working when you've only just heard them over the radio was just, it's marvelous. And I love to do it still.
This is Boston we're talking about? Going
to Boston? Boston Pops Orchestra. Then when I married my second husband, after Bill died, I found out to my absolute delight that he had tickets every Thursday, or not every Thursday, but most Thursdays, to watch the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Up on the first balcony, I just watched everybody in the orchestra doing their thing. It was heavenly. I've been very fortunate. I really have. And I'm grateful for it.
You wear it well.
Do I?
Yes, you do.
Did you find out about the tickets before you married him?
I wasn't quite clear about that.
Libby, any final thoughts from you?
No, I mean, I grew up in Concord, and I left it for about 25 years, and I came back about 11 years. And it isn't the Concord of our youth, but it's still beautiful. When I was growing up downtown, you could get anything and everything you needed in downtown Concord. And now you can get a lot of nice clothes and gifts, but it's still got a good feeling. And when I came back, I feel like I came back home, because that's what Concord is. It's home, and it's where I grew up, and I love it. And I still love Concord Center. And I, ironically, that's the right word, ended up living back on Hubbard Street. So I can still walk downtown or walk to the library. And I actually take classes where my mother met my father at the old high school, which was the Emerson High School around the corner. It's an art center now. So a lot of good feelings about Concord.
Is it different from other places?
Yes. I think it is. It's a special town. People, you know, I run into people who I knew in my youth, and you feel like you just saw them last year, or, you know, it's, there's not 40 years. There's just a nice connection. So.
You're home.
Home.
Yeah. Any conclusions from you?
Well, I'll just, as a concluding story, to wrapping all the things up that we were talking about and that you were just asking about how things have changed, and I think Concord and Lincoln were very much a rural place, and that's where a lot of our Wheeler Anderson roots come from. But the when my parents met in high school, sophomore year, my mother lived in Lincoln in the woods, and my father lived in Concord. And as we've talked about, he was very taken with nature, so much that he really felt like a Native American. So he, I believe, this is the story we were told, he tromped through the woods and shot an arrow into her front door with a love note on it. So there, wait, she'll correct it, but there...
The listeners there, can't see your mouth open and close here.
No, but therein began a relationship that led to all that we've talked about. And so
and the truth of the matter is, at that time we were having a major fight, and he was going with somebody else, and he just sent the arrow into the door with all kinds of not particularly nice remarks.
Okay, wait. Scratch that.
Poof.
And my mother, she heard the twang when it hit the door. And, you know, afterward, Bill did have some remorse. He thought, oh, my God, somebody could have opened that door. And we would. But anyway, she pulled and she gave me the note. And then she said, let me read it. She read it. She said, he still loves you.
So there,
she saw through.
Yeah, she saw through.
Mothers.
Oh, she was wonderful. She was, by the way, part Chinese, and she was born and grew up in Japan, and
Nagasaki.
No, yes, Nagasaki. Yes, she did. She grew up in Nagasaki. Her father was an Englishman and a sailor who, I think, sailed the Pacific Ocean in his own little ship. And the Mitsubishi Boat Company took a shine to him. And when they put a new boat yard into Nagasaki, they asked him if he would go down there and run the boat yard. So those are all the... And that's where he met his wife, who was part Chinese and part English, and they had all these little children.
Well, they made a beautiful one in you.
Yeah. No, I wasn't one of those. My mother was one of those.
Your mother was one, your descendant. Well, let's please think about spending more time recording you, and thank you three for starting this process. And
our pleasure.
Sharing all
absolutely.
This.
Where is this going?
I'll stop it here.